for some politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You wanna talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and politics. Fantasy sports and
Welcome to Fantasy Sports and Politics. It's Mr. FSP, back in the place to be, doing what I do because I do it for you, only because I love what I do. All right. I think it's going to be me solo today. You never know who's going to call in, but we shall see. But on today's episode, I plan to discuss two topics. The first being MMA, mixed martial arts, and Fox Sports. In particular, the UFC, or just Fox Sports in general. We're going to discuss the UFC big fight that's going to happen tonight on Fox One. I'm a big MMA fan, and I want to talk about it. Just celebrated their 20-year, anniversary, a generation of UFC. And it's quite amazing where the sport came from and where it is today. So we're going to discuss that. Also, week 10 in the NFL has already kicked off. Unfortunately, my Redskins took a beating by the 1-7, now 2-7 Minnesota Vikings. This is saddening to me. Very sad. With that being said, we're not going to discuss that game. I mean, it's just that simple. We're not going to discuss that game. Unless somebody calls up and we discuss it, and then I get upset, and then there's a problem. I don't want there to be any problems. We don't want no problems, do we? I don't think so. There shouldn't be no problems. So anyway, that's today's show in a nutshell. And we celebrated our 700th episode on Thursday. Fantasy Sports and Politics, the brand, has now done 700. This is 702 right here. This episode right here, 702. But on Thursday we did episode 700 where we reminisced about some of our favorite guests, favorite moments, and played some old commercials and stuff like that. So I'm going to bring back some of our old commercials. I'm going to play it. We used to be on at 6 p.m. Eastern. Now we're at 1 p.m. Eastern. So we're going to do a little flashback with that. Hopefully you guys are entertained. Are you not entertained? I watch a lot of TV. You got to forgive me. So anyway, we're going to hear from Mike Tomlin, Roddy White, and the ever-growing story of Richie Incognito and bullying in the NFL. Now, listen, I did not play in the NFL, but I did play football in high school and semi-pro and stuff like that. And, you know, I was a victim of hazing, bullying on both sides, you know, to a point where I just stood up and said, to the guy that was doing it, you know, you suck. Well, I approached the entire team and said, this is why we suck, because we can't get along, can't do this, da-da-da-da-da. So understand a little bit about the situation, maybe not on NFL level, but on a team sports level, I can speak about it. So we're going to talk about that as well. But right now, if you want to join in on the conversation, you know, it's real easy. All you got to do is dial 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. 1-800-520-2220. And, you know, chime in, and we're going to discuss whatever it is we can discuss and have fun with it. As I said, UFC is going to be on Fox tonight. Vitor Belfort versus Dan Henderson. It's a very good card, actually. It's a very good card. The thing is, how many people are going to see that free fight? It's free, yeah. You pay for your satellite. You pay for stuff like that. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, what's the catch? Why does Fox have a obsession? I don't say obsession, but why does Fox have the inside track with UFC? We know CBS attempted to do something with Strikeforce, and they tried to feature Kimbo Slice and all this other stuff, and it didn't work because it found out that people were trying to do things that, certain parts of Strikeforce were doing things that weren't above board. Then you have the Bellator situation, whereas Bellator's, president, owner, has a reputation of being a shady businessman. And has done some things that just weren't substantiate that. I'm just going off of the reports that I've read and things of that nature. But why is it that the UFC is able to work with Fox? They were on Spike, which isn't Fox, but they left Spike, went to FX, which is a Fox station. They're on Fuel. Pretty much everything on Fuel is UFC. Fuel is a derivative of Fox. Then they moved to Fox Sports 1. And for all accounts, they are the flagship programming. If you look at Fox Sports 1, you see that UFC action is pretty much on there, I want to say, 10 out of the 24 hours of the program they have. Especially on fight days, fight nights, and stuff like that. The real big break is when they do college football or drag racing or some of their regular programming. Looking back at the whole 20 years of of UFC, where it was SEG at first, and then it was sold to the brothers, and they decided to sink a lot of money into it. According to UFC and Zuffa, they sank about $60 million in it before million. If I had $60 million to put into something and maybe not turn a profit and still be freaking rich, I would be, oh my gosh, I don't know what I would be. But the Fertittas put $60 million in it, put their trust in Dana White, who at the time was then managing Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell and a few other folks, but they were all friends. And that's what makes UFC somewhat different, because I can see why Tito had such a big issue with Dana and all those, because of the ties that they had prior. And it all changed and stuff like that. Do I say it's a good thing? No. No, I don't. But that's what it was. But 20 years it took for mainstream America to get in on the sport heavily. Other countries, and I'm not saying that they're better or we're better, in the United States that is, but other countries such as Japan with Pride, biggest mixed martial arts organization in the world until UFC stepped up and took that title and bought them. Huge following. Huge. So, the story goes that the turning point in the UFC was two fights. Ken Shamrock and Tito Ortiz and Forrest Griffin and the American Psycho. I can't remember his name right now. I cannot remember his name right now. I just remember his moniker, the American Psycho. But that fight that Forrest Griffin and he had pretty much set the realm for where we are now, because that was the first televised free UFC fight. Everything else was on pay-per-view or anything like that, cable vision and stuff like that. But Forrest Griffin and the American Psycho gave such a great fight on Spike that night. The story goes, according to Dana White and the Fertittas, that a deal from Spike was made right then and there in the back alley of that casino to have another year of Tough. Because Tough Enough, or Ultimate Fighter, was carried by Spike for a season. And consequently, all those fighters that were on the first Tough have had long and plentiful careers in the UFC. Josh Koscheck, Forrest Griffin, Nate Diaz, Diego, I can't remember his first name right now, but Kenny Florian, all these different fighters have had long and illustrious careers and are now a part of the big picture in the UFC. So, interest Fox. Fox then decides, well, you know what, this is a growing sport. It's a global sport. It's not something that needs to be branded to different parts of the world, because why? It's already popular in different parts of the world. South America, Europe, Russia, Asia, Australia, Middle East. Different parts of the world already had an affinity for the UFC or for mixed martial arts. When the UFC did a fight in Abu Dhabi, now these guys are really wealthy, you know, already, so it probably wasn't much of a thing to do to finances, but they built a stadium for one fight card, and then they took it down, but they built a stadium for one night. And the UFC has become so popular that Fox has decided to jump on board and, you know, be big partners with them. Now, Dana White said that he joined them. He was excited with Fox because they share the same visions that he does. And I will say this, Fox Sports is way different than Fox News. Way different. Programming, analysts, and all that. Sports has a way of transcending everything and everyone, and it just so happens these folks have, you know, worked together for a very long time to make this big deal happen. And it's a long-term deal. Now, yes, it's a blood sport. It is. It's a physical blood sport. Rules have changed. Safety measures have been put in place. But it's still a blood sport. To the masses. On a popular and new and growing network. That's the question. Because they make money. The demographic of the UFC has changed. It first was only the male from 18 to 42 years old. That's a big demographic. But when you add it, Ronda Rousey and all of these women, now you add women in that same demographic. You add the prominence of women in a combative, and I mean, from the first woman's fight to the last woman's fight, those women have some of the best fights. So Fox, I'm just speculating here. Fox then jumps out there and says, "You know what? Well, they're getting this demographic. Let's jump on board. Let's have a little fun with it." And they did. So now Fox has given the reins of the Success Channel essentially to the UFC. Now that might not be the case, but that's pretty much where it's going, or where it is right now in my eyes. Again, it might not be true, but that's pretty much where I see it. Well, real quick, let's jump into these cards, or this card. Fight Night on Fox Sports 1. Tonight's November 9th. Headliner, Vitor Belfort. I like Vitor, the phenom. Goes against Dan Henderson. Dan Henderson is the number 6 ranked light heavyweight in the UFC. Now, both of these guys have been in the sport a very, very long time. I like Vitor. Vitor has adopted a different style as of late. He saw he wasn't getting the fight. He almost really submitted and defeated John Jones, the current light heavyweight champion that, by all accounts, is unstoppable right now, even though Gustafsson gave him a hell of a fight the other pay-per-view. But Vitor is one of these old guys, or older guys, that can bring it. They can bring it. Vitor is 23-10. Dan Henderson is 29-10. Vitor has won, and this is a surprising stat to me. Vitor has knocked out more of his opponents, or KO'd more of his opponents than Dan Henderson. And Henderson is known. That's his calling card, the overhand right, a big, loaded overhand right. But Henderson has a 45% KO to TKO ratio. So that means his fights, 45% of the time, are won by KO or TKO. Conversely, Vitor, KO, TKO, 70%. Crazy. That's the headline. Under that, you have some preliminaries that you can see on Fox or FX. I do believe some of these are going to be on Facebook. That's another thing that the UFC has done. UFC has put a lot of stuff on Facebook, free streaming of some of these fights on Facebook. Now, I can't guarantee any of these will be on there, but you got Jose Moreira versus Dustin Ortiz. Moreira is 33-4 with 2 no contests. Ortiz is 11-2. He's making his UFC debut. Whereas Jose Moreira has 45% of his wins by KO, 39% by submission. So this is the classic vet versus rook. Now, 11-2 doesn't mean that Ortiz is a rookie or something like that. It's just the fact that he's never fought in the octagon of the UFC. So that looks to be a good fight. Possibly I can't give you a winner in that because I don't know enough about the fighters. Then also, Adriano Martins 24-6 versus Dan Khrushchev, who's 13-3. Another fight where you have a vet versus UFC rookie, Adriano. Yes, he has a total of 30 fights, but none in the UFC. So his KO submission and decision record is not up. But 54% of Dan Khrushchev's victories have come by KO or TKO. So the one that's more experienced has never fought in the UFC and plans to, let's say, make an impression on the vet. Then you got Diego Tavares, 21-5-1, versus Justin Salas, 11-4. Justin looks like the kid next door that picked up wrestling and was pretty good at it, so now he's in UFC. I'm just making an observation. I'm not saying that's his case. He's pretty good, but Diego looks to be like a submission specialist with 52% of his wins by submission. Whereas Justin, almost half of his victories, which are 11, came by decision. So that tells me he's a tactical fighter. He doesn't go for the kill. Even though he has 27 of his victories by KO, TKO, and 27 by submission, he seems like he's more well-rounded, whereas Diego is looking for a submission. It still might be something. Stefan, Tourette syndrome. looks to be doing something. It just hit me. The guy that fought in the first Ultimate Fighter finale was Stefan Bonner. He was American Psycho. It was him. And I couldn't remember his name to save my life. And for whatever reason, it just hit me in the head that that's who it was. Sorry about that. Let's go to the next fight. Ronnie Jason versus Jeremy Stevens. The little heathen has a reputation. He swings for the fences, and his record shows 21-9, 71% by knockout. And Ronnie Jason is 14-3. Because I know Jeremy Stevens a little bit, I'm going to pick Jeremy Stevens in this fight only because I see Ronnie Jason as a submission guy. 64% of his wins are by submission. And that tells me jiu-jitsu versus brawler. And I don't know about this guy's boxing skills. I have no idea, but there seems to be a slight difference in the two. Whereas, you know, takedown defense for Jason is almost 67%, so he's very good at defending the takedown, but he doesn't try for the takedown that much. So there's a difference. All right, let's move on. Santiago Ponzinibbio, I can't get that last name, Ponzinibbio, takes on Ryan LaFleur. And Santiago is making his UFC debut. An impressive 18-1 elsewhere. And Ryan is 8-0 in the UFC. Half of his wins have come by KO. He takes people down to the ground 75% of the time, which is a good thing. Striking accuracy is about 41%. Almost 68% defense. Should be a good fight. There's a lot of new guys coming to the UFC on this card, which is cool. Another fight, Paulo Thiago versus Brandon Thatch. Now, I like Thiago. I like Thiago in this fight. He's a very, very accomplished fighter. He's 15-5. He's a submission guy, but Thiago can stand with you as well. Striking accuracy is at 41%, But Thatch is a 65% striking accuracy, and 70% of his wins have come by KO. So I'm picking that one as the fight of the night because of the styles. I think that's going to be a good stylistic fight. So, you know, you can take it for what it's worth. I think that's going to be a good fight. Let's move on. Rafael Cavalcante, if I get that name right, faces Igor Pokrajak. Wow, can't get it. Pokrajak. Now, here's the thing. Rafael's 11-4. Igor's 25-10. Both have won no decision. But this is a startling thing. And this is why I think Igor's going to win. All of Rafael's wins have been by KO. Heavy hands. But sometimes these heavy hand folks, they get gassed out. This is a light heavyweight division. And Rafael is impressive with 100% of KOs. But Igor is a KO guy, submission guy. He's won 12% by decision. Both of them slug pretty well, 55% for Rafael, 45% for Igor. I mean, this is a pretty even match. Takedown defense, though, Rafael has a pretty good takedown defense, 80%. I say pretty good, and it's 80%. It's only been in 16 fights. But we'll see. But I'm going to pick Igor in this one. Let's move on to another good fight. Cesar Ferreira versus Daniel Safarian. 4-2 for Cesar and 9-3 for Daniel. Even though Daniel looks like he's a submission guy, 67% of his wins by submission. So that means 6 of his 9 wins have come by submission. Although Cesar has a 100% takedown defense in all 6 fights, you know, he hasn't taken anybody down. So, you know, go figure. We'll see. Interesting. And again, we take you back to our fight main event, the card main event, which is Vitor Belfort versus Dan Henderson. And I'm picking Vitor because, again, Dan Henderson, very accomplished wrestler. But that overhand right is what gets people. And if Vitor can get past that and, you know, get away from it, he wins this fight. Will it be by decision? I don't know. But slugging, I don't know if he wants to do that with Dan Henderson with that big right hand. I think this should go to a decision if Vitor wants to win. Or submission. Henderson has tapped out before, so it's not like it's impossible. But that's tonight's fight card on Fox Sports 1 UFC Fight Night. Hope you guys enjoy it. I plan to watch a little bit of it and see what happens with it. But right now, it's time to get ready for the big main event. Thing I like to call football. Let's do it.
Go! Carrying the ball 20 times a game requires power and valor, not niftiness. The water bug and whippet backs rarely survive the wail and howl of the banshee. Stack defenses in the pros. They must meld the butt of a billy goat with the sudden surge of a sprinter. He does not move with polish or slickness. His method is not Grand Prix, but Demolition Derby.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get some starts and sits and weekly picks. NFL Week 10. NFL Week 10's upon us. I already said that one game I don't want to talk about, Redskins and Vikings. Sorry about that. Week 10. Wow. Only only 7 more weeks left of the regular season, then they're already into the playoffs. We had just crowned the Ravens as Aggies Super Bowl champions not too long ago. I love sports, though. I love sports. I love football. I love football. If we're talking about football, there's another thing that's going to happen real, real soon. We have a sponsor, and that sponsor will be revealed very shortly. And we'll get to that in a minute. But right now, let's get a little update on what's going on with Richie Incognito. If you don't know about the situation, take a listen.
An onslaught of media greeting him at LAX, including ABC's Miami affiliate WPLG.
Richie, you have anything to say about those things?
Incognito offered a steady stream of...
I'm not going to make my comment and say no comment. No comment at this time.
Including when asked about his teammate and target of his alleged bullying, Jonathan Martin.
Are you here to meet with Jonathan Martin?
At this point, man, I'm not making a comment.
Martin was seen Friday leaving his parents' home in Southern California, where he's preparing for a meeting with the NFL's independent investigator next week.
So, ladies and gentlemen, bullying in the NFL. You know, talk about it a little bit, whereas I was, like, hazed and stuff in high school and crap like that. You know, being a rookie or whatever. And, you know, it went on a little bit. As a senior, you know, I was doing my best because it was my second year playing organized football. And, you know, I have speed, or I had speed. And there was some stuff going on there, you know, that probably shouldn't have been going on because of stature of players. And I was not the top-tier player. I was just a very... bottle of talent that needed to be shaped and molded and stuff like that. So my aggression wasn't as much as it could have been. So I'm going to put myself in the place of Martin. You know, and this guy played at Stanford, ran the ball, Toby Gerhart and some other backs and whatnot under Jim Harbaugh. And he has a football mentality, but he's just not that type of player. You have different types of players in the NFL. You have the I'm just going to play because I can play and I got the talent and I only know a few types of things. I'm not a big student of the game player. Then you have those that have talent and are students of the game. And then you have those that aren't really that talented, but they're students of the game. So they have longer careers. Now, if you go to Stanford for 4 years, get a degree, then come to the NFL, well, 3 years, actually, you got a degree in 3 years, I think you're probably the guy that's a student of the game and pretty talented. I'm not knocking Richie's intelligence. I'm not knocking Richie's prowess as a intellectual on the football field or, you know, outside of sports. But when you put two people, totally different mindsets together, or in a locker room where half might be one way, half might be another, or a third, and a third, you're going to end up with some conflict. You are. And, yes, some of the stuff probably should stay in the locker room, but at the same time, if the stuff is going on, somebody needs to say something. Now, if Martin was up there, you know, hee-hee and gaga with it, that could have been his coping mechanism as to get along. I'm not making a defense for him, nor am I making a defense for Richie Incognito, because what I think Richie Incognito did was pretty wrong. If anything is substantiated, it's pretty wrong. But it also goes along the lines of all the other NFL teams. This is when you hear, you know, that type of player wouldn't make it in our locker room type of conversation. Patriots locker room, Bill Belichick runs a tight ship, and people say, well, this player will never work. But when they go to Bill Belichick, because that locker room doesn't put up with, you know, X, Y, Z, things get done a certain way. Now, Joe Philbin, a lot of people, including my cousin, does not like the way that Joe Philbin runs the Miami Dolphins. I mean, he got rid of Chad Johnson. Now, Chad, 2 weeks prior to his arrest, came to the team and to his coaches and said he's having some marital problems. And that was it. 2 weeks later, he gets arrested for headbutting his wife, and then he gets kicked off the team, no longer in the NFL, da-da-da-da-da. Reggie Bush, when they got rid of Chad Johnson, Reggie Bush, along with Cameron Wake, went to Philbin and, you know, suggested that they have a council, a player council. Funny thing is, neither Reggie Bush nor Cameron Wake, the Dolphins anymore. Reggie Bush is doing just fine up in Detroit. I forget where Cameron Wake went. Maybe still on Dolphins, I don't know. But Long was also on that council and also one of the people that went to Joe Philbin is no longer there either. And a report came out that a recently departed Dolphin has said that there are issues going on there, just like the Martin situation. I think it's Reggie Bush or Long myself. That's just me. I think that's who it is, one of those two. But the fact that you got people here in the Dolphins organization saying, well, you know, they stick up for Richie Incognito, they'd rather have, not saying they'd rather have him, but, you know, Martin went along with it and stuff like that. Yeah, fine. Because it didn't happen to you, it was fine. And another sad case is Jeff Ireland telling Martin's manager or agent 2 or 3 days before the kid decides, you know what, I'm just going to leave. Telling him, why don't you just punch him? Got it. I can understand that. I really can. I really can. But is it the appropriate thing to say, especially being the GM? And that leads me to believe that Joe Philbin's a liar as well. Joe Philbin says he knew nothing about it. Now, if he didn't know anything about it, Jeff Ireland is a terrible, terrible person and GM. Because a situation like that, the GM should talk to the coach, find out what's going on, see if there's any validity to it. And if there is validity to it, what did the coach do to stop it? So Jeff Ireland, he should be on his way out the door. Now, what did this do? This did three things. It's blowing up the whole NFL locker room and what's going on in the NFL, in its locker room, behind closed doors, where there's supposed to be some sort of sanctuary, is bringing more scrutiny, bad scrutiny, to the NFL to go along with the concussions and stuff like that. And it's bringing a light to sports in general. Hazing, bullying, whatever you want to call it. It goes on even down to the pee-wee level. I can speak about that because my son, you know, he's a rookie. First year, my oldest boy and my youngest boy, first years they played football, organized. And my oldest son, you know, he got bullied a little bit, and then he stood up and you know, fought back a little bit, and he's a little aggressive. Yes, I talked to the coach and stuff like that, and the coach addressed it. But there's still some kids that are talented but just don't have the home training or whatever it is to, you know, understand, look, this is a game, this is a team sport, understand you like to joke, understand you like to do this, that, and the third, but you don't do that type of stuff to your teammate. Picking on them, teasing them, you know, just because they're not like you. That's what happens in all sports, whether it's female, male, pro, amateur, whatever. It happens. But to what extent? Now, a lot of people say that Martin should have stood up and stopped it himself. And said, who says he did? Nobody. I don't know. I don't. I can't speak about that. That locker room probably can, but that locker room of the Miami Dolphins saying nobody knew there was a problem because nobody ever said anything. A lot of people handle things differently. Some people don't speak out. Some people do. I personally prefer a person to say what's on their mind. If I did something to bother them or if I did something wrong and it bothered them, I prefer them to approach me as opposed to holding it in and festering. That's just me. you know. But some people, and I'm talking about Martin here, he might not be that way. So whether Richie is being, if he's being thrown under the bus because the coaches don't want to stand up and say, yeah, well, we told him to razz him some and da-da-da-da-da, make him tough, and he's being a good soldier, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. Because this is a bad situation. Very bad. I invite Richie Incognito, Joe Philbin, any of the Miami Dolphins, Martin, any NFL player, boxer, any athlete that's had to put up with type of hazing / bullying and still be productive. You have it in your everyday work lives, not just in sports. But how you deal with it is what counts, honestly. How you deal with it. And you can't fault the kid or the man for, you know, leaving the team because, you know, he didn't know how to deal with it because he wasn't getting the support that he thought he should get or he wanted. It doesn't hurt that both his parents are high-profile lawyers. That hurt either. This guy's about to get paid. Probably never have to play football ever again. And if he does play football again, you know, who's going to play for? First-round draft pick. But will people then be afraid to talk to him because, you know, they know his mom and dad are lawyers, and then he might leak some information that's going on in the locker room? You got all these other side effects of what could happen, but can't think about that. Let the kid play. Get this over with. Fellas, if you're going to haze, you know, something simple, carry the helmets, the shoulder pads, got it, buy lunch, buy dinner. Not no $30,000 check like every other week or for a whole year. Nah, you don't do that. You don't do that to somebody. You don't. But we're going to talk about that game first, which is the Monday night game, and work our way around, okay? So Miami goes to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay almost upset Seattle last week. In Seattle, by the way. This is the Greg Schiano watch, along with the Richie Incognito watch. Now, the soundbite I played for you shows that, yes, Richie came out here to the West Coast, maybe to meet with Martin and the independent counsel to see what they can get accomplished. But there's going to be so much press at this game that if Miami wins, it probably won't even matter. But if Tampa wins, two things happen here. One, people get off Greg Schiano for a hot minute, depending on how they win. Two, the whole Martin Incognito issue comes up because two guys, Ryan Tannehill was getting blasted, at least five sacks, 4 to 5 sacks a game. Now you're putting your second stringers in. Now McKenzie's playing left tackle. He's no rookie, but he's also not what he used to be. But then you got the second-tier player coming in at left guard to play for Incognito. Of course, he's had like a week and a half to get ready for it because he played last Thursday night. But does that help Tannehill? Because the second-string player was worse than Incognito, and Tannehill was still getting killed. What's going to happen when Tampa blitzes like crazy? As much as it pains me to say this, Tampa wins the game. It pains me to say, but Tampa wins the game. At home, first win of the season. All right, let's go to Philly and Green Bay. Philly is going to get let down so quickly in this one. I mean, I know all you guys went out and probably got the quarterback, foils off of waivers if you didn't have them already. But I'm here to tell you, he's not going to fare well. He's not. First is going to fare well is going to be Shady McCoy. Shady and your boy, DeSean Jackson. I know everybody went on and got Riley Cooper as well. But DeSean Jackson has been very quiet lately. Now, if Foyles doesn't throw the ball to Jackson, that's a mistake. But we'll see what happens there. But you won't get that same performance from Foyles or Riley Cooper in this game. You're not. Shady's going to be the star in this game. But I also look for Seneca Wallace to have some running room. The problem in this game is this. Offense is tailor-made to go against Green Bay and their porous defense. Yes, Clay Matthews comes back this week. But that up-tempo offense, how many opportunities is he going to have to sack Foyles? If Foyles gets the ball out quickly, if it's a handoff, if it's a pitch, if it's a screen, whatever it is, you know? How many times do you have that opportunity? We don't know. We'll see. The problem I see with Green Bay is this. Seneca Wallace. It's not Aaron Rodgers. Definitely not as accurate. He definitely doesn't have a strong enough arm. But the one thing that he does have that will help Green Bay win this game, Eddie Lacy is the thing that's going to keep that Philadelphia offense on the sideline. So you put Eddie Lacy in, you give him the ball, he's going to get maybe 35 rushes. He and James Starks are going to touch the ball, count them, 45 times. 45 times or more. I don't care how they touch it, but they're going to touch it 45 times or more. Jordy Nelson, he might get in the end zone. Last time James Jones didn't have a great game before his injury. The second game he came out and had an awesome game, but that was with Aaron Rodgers. Seneca Wallace does not have the arm, again, of Aaron Rodgers. He might try to force a ball to him, might get a pick six, or even a pick, whatever it is, and cause the Packers a chance of scoring or winning the game. But I think Seneca will run more. He'll run more. So don't expect a long bomb from Seneca to Jordy or Boykins or James Jones. But you can't expect a win from Green Bay in this game. I would not play Seneca in this game, though. I would not. That's just me. Moving on. Jacksonville heads to Tennessee. Now, Tennessee has a very strong defense, but Jacksonville, they're in dire straits now. Cecil Short's going to play, so don't worry about that. MJD's going to play, so don't worry about that. And this is a chance for MJD to finally get in the end zone. I think this is a great matchup for him because Tennessee has a not-so-good run defense, but they have an overall good defense. On the opposite side, Jacksonville has a very good defense that's more apt to stop in the run, decent against the pass. Jake Locker's back, second game in a row. And Sean Green, who was supposed to get 15 touches, didn't get 15 touches last week. He got about 6 or 7, but he got a touchdown. Chris Johnson went off. He went off last week. Smash and Dash are back, ladies and gentlemen. Smash and Dash are back, version 2. Tennessee's going to ride that run train for a while. I personally wouldn't play one of the receivers for Tennessee. I like Locker. I really do. But Britt hasn't done anything, won't do anything. Wright is good, but I'm not too sure what's going to happen with him. And Nate Washington is their leading receiver. If I had to play a receiver for Tennessee, it would be Nate. It would be Nate. But let's move on, picking Tennessee in that game. Got a sound bite here. E.J. Manuel makes his return for the Buffalo Bills. C.J. Spiller as well. C.J. came out big time last week versus the Kansas City Chiefs, and Kansas City is vulnerable against the run. Vulnerable against the run. We'll talk about that in a minute. Here's what Mike Tomlin had to say about the return of one E.J. Manuel.
He's a talented guy. He's worthy of the first-round selection. He can throw the ball at any point on the field. He's got poise in the pocket, particularly for a young guy. Does a nice job of administering their offense, the no-huddle variety of offense. that they employ, and obviously his mobility and escapability is an asset.
So adding that to the mix makes C.J. Spiller even more valuable. Actually, I just made a trade in one of my leagues that I'm in on NFL.com. I just traded Alfred Morris, and everybody listening to the show knows I'm a Redskins fan, so that was tough. I traded Alfred Morris for C.J. Spiller and Kansas City's defense. I think it's a very good trade for me. It's a good trade for my opponent or for the person that I traded with because he gets a running back that he feels is going to be a dynamic running back, which he is. The problem I see right now is that Mike Shanahan doesn't use Alfred as much as he did last year or as he should in this year. And it's not Mike Shanahan. It's Junior. Well, it's not Junior, but you know his name. Kyle. It's Kyle. You got to run Al. You have to run Alfred. You have to. Otherwise, he has no value to you if he's not in the PPR. The more touches he gets, the better he is. He's not going to get that many touchdowns this year because they're giving the ball to Roy Helu to make it look like they're going to throw the ball, and then he gets it on a draw or something like that. But I thought it was a good deal. And in this game, Pittsburgh, they've worked on their offensive line. They've got Davis. Excuse me, not Davis. They picked up the offensive guard from Arizona and plugged him in. Mr. Brown, I believe his name is, and he's doing wonders there because that offensive line was shoddy at best, and Ben Roethlisberger threw for 4 Bills last week, 400 yards, a couple TDs. Jericho Cotchery is another big play. Get Jericho Cotchery. He's out there. If he's not, great move on the person to pick him up. He's the number one receiver for Kansas, for Pittsburgh right now. Emmanuel and Brown, no. They're good threes. Not even number twos. Threes. Jericho Cotchery is that guy. Jericho Cotchery is the guy you want to get. If you have to. And if you can. In this game, which is at Pittsburgh, I got to go with Buffalo, with E.J. Manuel returning, C.J. Spiller getting healthy, and Fred Jackson there. I got to go with him. I think it's going to be a shootout, actually. I think it's going to be a shootout. But I'm going to go with Buffalo. If you listen to this program during the summer, or if you're a follower of this program, you know I've said that I think Buffalo will be number two in the AFC East, and I thought Miami would be number one. Miami is number two. Buffalo is number – they're the last team in the division right now because the Jets are number three. They're tied for number two, I believe. And, unfortunately, the Patriots are number one, even though they still suck. But with Gronk coming back and Amendola, if he can stay healthy, it's going to be tough now to beat the Patriots. They had their opportunities. Teams had opportunities to put the Patriots in a hole. And they missed. So right now, I'm saying it, with those two guys back, the Patriots are going to be tough to beat now, very tough. But Buffalo beats Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh on Sunday. Next game, Oakland comes to New York to face the Giants. Another player that is pretty much done, I'm going to tell you, is Darren McFadden. Darren McFadden is going to look for a backup role next year. A backup role. Now, this kid has, but he's going to be a backup next year. This is his walk year for the Raiders. And the Raiders will be smart, and they won't re-sign him. They'll go draft somebody out of the draft and mold him and use Rashad Jennings as a starting back. Rashad Jennings did a pretty good job last week. He's going to get another opportunity this week to start. Last week he came in relief when Oakland played Philadelphia and did pretty well. But this week he goes against the Giants' porous run defense. Now the Giants might load the box up like they did against Minnesota and Dan Terrell Pryor to beat them. But Pryor can beat him with his legs and some decent passes. He's gotten better with his accuracy. I've noticed it. He's gotten better. So the read option is in full effect. But the Giants have a little experience with that going against RG3. Except Terrell Pryor is a bigger, stronger RG3. Less accurate, though. Now, Rod Streeter and Jacoby Ford, to me, they're number three receivers. But going against this Giants secondary, I look for them to have pretty decent games. On the opposite side, Peyton Hillis, they're going to have to pound Peyton Hillis. The Raiders lead the league in sacks. And Eli has been sacked quite a bit this year and thrown the ball turned the ball over quite a bit this year. So if they're not running Peyton Hillis, turn of Mr. Brown, I believe his name is Mike Brown, go pick him up off the waiver wire if you can. Mike Brown gives the Giants that running back that David Wilson isn't. And David Wilson should be going on the IR, by the way. That neck injury, I don't know if it's from the back tips or where it came from, but he might be done for the season. If you held on to him, sorry for you. But Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz and even Ruben Randall should have a good game here against that secondary of Oakland because they can't be thrown on. I think it's going to be a sloppy game. But I think Oakland comes in and wins. The Giants, for some reason, just can't get it together. Unless they smash Peyton Hillis and Brown quite a bit, I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. Brandon Jacobs had the one good game, and he's back on the sideline, injured again. Don't know what's going to happen with him. So, yeah, pick Oakland. Let's move on to a very interesting game where we see St. Louis going to Indianapolis. Now, St. Louis has finally given the ball to Zach Stacy and said, Zach, here's your ball, run with it. Zach is that type of back that Fisher likes. He's a pounder. He's a plotter. He's actually a guy, he won't make you miss a lot, but you don't want to get in his way. So they're going to give him the ball. And Stacy is a good back to have right about now. If he's if you're looking for a back, and he's not on anybody's team, pick him up. The problem I see is Kelvin Clemens. Good quarterback. He likes Chris Givens, but he doesn't, for some reason, like Tavon Austin. He hasn't given Tavon the ball. Or the offense hasn't given Tavon the ball. One or the other. I can't explain what's going on there. I really can't. But from there, you go on the other side of the ball. Will Trent Richardson play? Word is he might not even play, which makes Donald Brown even more valuable than he already is. Donald Brown has vultured more touches from Trent Richardson than anybody anticipated once the trade was made. Is Trent Richardson a bust? Will everybody have to eat their words and say that Cleveland wasn't dumping and that they knew what they were doing? And they got something good in return for a guy that isn't worth it? I don't know. I play Donald Brown in this game. If I'm playing a three running back format or if I have an opportunity and the running backs I have aren't that great or they're backups, I get Donald Brown for the pure fact that he may start this game. He already gets time. And he leads them in touchdown rushes. But put in the part that he's going to start, and St. Louis gives up over 120 yards or 111 yards to the running backs per game. Come on now. Somebody talk to me. That's going to be a win-win fantasy-wise. Indianapolis at home, they don't even have to throw the ball that much. There's Haywood Bay. Huge disappointment. Thought he's going to be an outside presence. T.Y. Hilton is that guy right now, but you can't put him on the outside. He has to stay in the slot. He has to stay in the slot. He's not that big. He's going to get knocked around on routes and stuff. St. Louis is physical. But I wasn't going to be good enough to stop him. Another sneaky play, and I'm stealing some of JT's thunder right now, is your boy Kobe Fleener. Good play. A good play in this game. Again, St. Louis gives up some yards in the running game and to the tight end. Indianapolis. Now, to a game that has a return of a player. This one player says it was hard to watch his team. Let's see if we figure out who it is.
It's always frustrating when you don't win, you know, no matter if you're in the game or on the sideline, but it's more difficult when you're not affecting the game, you know, and, you know, it's tough, you know, just sitting on the sideline and, you know, you want to be out there, you want to help your team, but, you know, you're trying to be, you know, a sideline coach and try to help the young players out and things like that, but so anxious to want to be out there.
That was Roddy White of the Atlanta Falcons, and, you know, Roddy's talking about how difficult it is for him to sit out there and watch his team struggle. You know, games they should have been winning, they're not because Julio's gone. He's gone. Jackson wasn't there, and now that he's back, he's not doing much. So Roddy White returns today, but he's going against that Seattle Seahawks defense. Those corners, the Legion of Boom. Now, him and Harry Douglas are better than Harry Douglas and Johnson, I'll tell you that much. Richard Sherman is going to be talking a whole bunch of trash to Roddy White, but I guarantee Roddy White is going to get targeted a lot in this game, a lot. Tampa Bay exposed Seattle's defense at Seattle. They can be susceptible to the run, which is amazing because their front seven is pretty good. Their back four is even better. But will Steven Jackson or Jaquez Rogers be able to run against them? Will Matty Ice be able to find, you know, Roddy White, Harry Douglas, Tony Gonzalez? Tony Gonzalez had a pretty decent game last week, too. Unfortunately, I think Atlanta loses this game. I really do. I think they lose. Only because I think Atlanta, they're missing the piece defensively. I got a coworker that loves the Falcons. He blames Dimitrov. But last year, he was praising Dimitrov. I'm like, dude, you can't say the guy's a terrible GM this year because, you know, the team's dealing with a lot of injuries and stuff. But he brought up a good point when he said he was playing them. They went out and got O.C. Umenyiora. O.C.'s not that big of a run threat. He's pretty much John Abraham, maybe a couple years younger. And Abraham's doing a pretty good job, I believe, in Arizona. So you get O.C., but you don't get somebody that's a run stopper. Or someone that's going to be on the field three of the downs rushing the quarterback, getting in his face. OC's good, but he's just not that guy. He's not. So I can see what my coworkers' thoughts are about Dimitrov there, but other than that, you know, the secondary needs to play better. The whole defense needs to play better. And I just don't think that they're going to be able, even if Marshawn Lynch does not play, because there's a chance that Marshawn might not play, or he plays limitedly. I think Seattle's just that much better of a team. I know they lost to Seattle. I mean, I know Seattle lost to Atlanta in the playoffs last year, but that was when they were at full strength. This year they're not at full strength, and the Falcons, that is. So I don't see that happening. Pick Seattle to win. Cincinnati and Baltimore. Now, I pick Cincinnati to win a division this year. They're going to do it. They're going to go out and defeat them. They really are. They are going to go to M&T Bank Field, and Giovanni Bernard, Marvin Jones, A.J. Green, they're going to dismantle the Ravens. The Ravens, for some reason, can't seem to get Ray Rice on track. Everyone said it. When Anquan Boldin left and went to San Fran, Joe Flacco lost his security blanket. Thus, he lost the confidence in his receivers. And thus, the big playability from the receiving core is gone. Tandon Doss is a good guy, but not the answer. Kobe Jones, great special teamer, good receiver, not the guy. Smith, a number two playing number one. Be honest. He's a number two receiver playing number one. I can't blame Flacco completely. He's not making the play calls. He's not dropping the balls. He's not, you know, the one, well, he is the one getting interceptions, but a lot of them are deflections or balls that, you know, aren't his fault. But I look at it and say, Baltimore is to rebuild. They do. They just do. Defense is good, but not good enough. Can't let Ed Reed go. Well, you got to let Sugar retire. You brought in Doomerville. Let Kruger go. You let Ellerby go. Bring in Smith. Smith's a good fit, by the way. But it's just something. The cornerbacks. Kerry Williams goes to Philly. Cornerbacks aren't as good as they were last year. I'm just saying. Cincinnati. And I think Gresham loses that receiving tight end battle against Eifert. If you're in a pinch, play Eifert. If you're in a pinch, I think he's going to have a pretty good game versus Baltimore. Now, to a game that interests me a great deal, fantasy-wise and monetarily-wise, I like this matchup. I think it's going to be the highest-scoring game this season. And, yes, that includes the Dallas-Denver game, which was like 95 points or something like that. Detroit goes to Chicago. Jay Cutler returns. It's a division game. It's a must-win for both teams. In one of my fantasy leagues, I have Megatron, Reggie, and Stafford. So I hope they have a great, great game. But Chicago winning this game. I see Chicago doing something to Detroit that's going to demoralize them. I think they put about 56 points up on those guys. Yes, I said it, 56 points. I think Chicago scores and scores and scores in this game. Brandon Marshall has a big game. Matt Forte has a big game. Martellus Bennett has a good game. Alshon Jeffries has a good game. On the same time, Megatron and Reggie go off too. I think this is going to be like a 56-42 game. Don't play either defense, fantasy world. Don't play either defense. But I'm picking Chicago to win the game for more than just the fact that I think they're going to beat them on the field, but because I need Chicago to win. If Jerry was on the line, he would be talking about this game and licking his chops. And, of course, he would pick Detroit, but that's not going to happen. Let's move on to another game. San Fran takes on Carolina. Carolina's coming in hot and heavy. Cam Newton and the boys have found their way back to the win column a couple weeks in a row. Jonathan Stewart returns, which actually hinders Mike Tolbert's value. It also hurts D'Angelo Williams, who was having a good year Only one touchdown, but he was having a solid year. Now there's three running backs in the mix. I don't know if Stewart's going to break up the chemistry. Tolbert didn't when he came back, but that's kind of hard. Plus, Cam can run the ball, too. But on the opposite side, Alden Smith returns for the San Francisco 49ers. It's a big pickup. Alden Smith and Justin Smith on the same side. It could be pretty dangerous for the 49ers. But even worse, for opposing offenses. It's a different type of outlook here. 49ers are going to grind the ball. Even though the Panthers have the number three defense in the NFL versus pass and run, they're still going to have to grind the ball. They have to. Crabtree returns to practice, but that doesn't mean Crabtree returned to games. So you know Vernon's going to get double teamed. Receivers out there in San Fran aren't as good as you would want them to be. LaMichael James comes back, and he looks to be the kickoff return specialist guy. So field position is going to be a must. This is going to be a very low-scoring game, in my opinion, and it's going to be a defensive game, in my opinion. And my gut says pick San Fran, but my mind and the rolling of what's been going on, I got to pick Carolina. I got to pick Carolina this game. Next game on our docket is Houston and Arizona. Interesting game here. Gary Kubiak had a onset of a stroke or the preliminary signs of a stroke. I think it's called TIB or something like that, or TIA or something like that. In the middle of their game last week where the Texans were dominating. They were dominating. But then it just went downhill. Some people will say it's the Wade Phillips effect. I don't know. Arian Foster may be gone for the season. Maybe. Now he has a disc issue. So, therefore, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I think that you got a lot of fantasy goodness here. Mr. Tate, even with four broken ribs, threw the ball 22 times. 22 times. You might get that a little bit more in this game. Houston, you have a problem. Arizona is going to get a second win in a row. Ellington is going to run through you guys. I'm sorry, they just are. Fitz is going to have a good game. Andre Johnson and Case Keenum have found a connection. This guy goes for 190 in the first half of the game last week. Only gets one ball thrown to him in the second half. Something is wrong there. Something is really wrong. But we'll see what happens. Arizona wins this game. Now, let's go Denver and San Diego. Big, big game here. Interim coach. And again, this is strange. Two head coaches go down same week. One from a stroke and one from a mild stroke. You got Fox, who's out. It was a stroke or a heart attack. It's one or the other. I can't remember. He's out. And Jack Del Rio takes over as coach for – he had his chance in Jacksonville, but, again, he didn't have much to work with. But now he has Peyton Manning in Jacksonville. So there's going to be – I think we're going to see a continuation of wins with Denver and San Diego. This is going to be a very good game, actually. It's the game just before the Sunday night game. So Phillip Rivers looks to bounce back off of the loss from Washington. And Danny Woodhead is going to be an integral part of this game. I really think he is. Keenan Allen, who is that I want to say he's a dark horse. I don't think he gets off in this game. I really don't. I really don't think he gets off in this game. But the key to this, and I don't understand why they didn't do it last week, but is running Ryan Matthews. Keep Peyton Manning on the side. Run Ryan Matthews. Keep Ryan Matthews in there. Make Danny Woodhead the third down back. Got it. But don't take snaps away from Ryan Matthews because you have to get first downs. You have to run on this team. The Redskins can run on them. You can run on them, San Diego. But with that being said, Denver still wins this game. I'm sorry to tell you, Denver's going to beat you, and it's going to be close, only because it's at home. Only because it's at home. But Denver wins this game. All right? Sunday night game. And remember I said that I thought that Chicago and Detroit would be the high-scoring game. Dallas and New Orleans has potential to be the highest-scoring game, but I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be. I think it'll be a competitive game. Dallas has made some great Houdini tricks and won against Minnesota, and they stood up and said, okay, well, we're not going to take it anymore. We're going to fight. We're going to use the talent. But something's wrong with Dez Bryant, and I don't know how healthy he is. Terrence Williams looks to get back in the end zone this week, and I think he'll get a lot of targets this week, along with Jason Witten. DeMarco Murray will be used heavily. He should be. He only ran 9 times last week. 9 times. It's terrible. That's terrible. I feel sorry for DeMarco Murray fans and owners in fantasy. But you should get a heavy dose of him in this game. Keep Drew Brees on the sideline. Marcus Colson has been a disappearing act. Kenny Stills stepped up. Lance Moore returns. Pierre Thomas has done a lot more. Sproles comes off of a concussion. He really needs to be a big part of this game if New Orleans is going to win. He really, really needs to be a big part of this game. And because it's in New Orleans, I'm picking New Orleans. Not because I don't like the Cowboys, but because I think New Orleans plays better at home. They have a solid group of players that are already on the same page. No dysfunction there. There's no, we're going to run this week, we're going to pass this week. No, it's we're going to throw. We're going to throw the ball. And when we run the ball, we're going to be effective too. And we're going to play solid defense all the way around. DeMarcus Ware returns in this game, yes. He returns, but he's going to have to drop back. I know they're playing a 4-3, but he's going to have to drop back in coverage. He's going to have to do something to help that secondary. Because Drew Brees, Jimmy Graham, maybe Marcus Colston, Kenny Stills, Lance Moore, and Aaron Sproles. Oh, and by the way, LeFleur Wynn, Pierre Thomas. And if he's healthy, maybe Mark Ingram. Oh, and by the way, that other rookie running back that's getting more time than Mark Ingram. It's too many weapons. And they have a good defense, too. It's just too much. Just too much. New Orleans wins this game, hands down. All right, we already did the Monday night game, guys. So we're going to jump over that. I'm going to reiterate, I think Tampa's going to win that game. Seattle gets off with the hot seat for a second, and Miami gets turned up just a little bit more. Let's go to the Thursday night game, where you see a AFC South division game between the Colts and the Titans. Now, I'm not sure if they're keeping Trent Richardson out this week for the Colts, but if they are, does that also mean he's not going to play Thursday night? Or is it a precaution that he doesn't play Sunday because they need him Thursday? You never know. It's a short week, though. And I do know that Indianapolis had a strong chance of winning that division. But, yeah, I said, but it's in Tennessee. The new Smash and Dash version 2 come out and kind of put it on Indianapolis. Indianapolis' passing game isn't what it could be without Reggie Wayne. unless Darius Hayward Bay steps up, but that hasn't happened. I think Tennessee is a better team overall, even though Mathis has been killing it. Mathis has been killing it on the defensive side of the ball for Indianapolis. He took to that standing up outside linebacker position like fish to water. Really, he did. I think he's leading the league in sacks right now. So, yes, I'm going to pick Tennessee at home to win this game. And it's going to be a very good game. But hopefully, Tennessee proves me right and wins the game. All right, ladies and gentlemen, with that being said, that is your Week 10 NFL breakdown along with the first game of Week 11, the Thursday night game, the Colts at the Titans, here on Fantasy Sports and Politics, Saturday edition. Now, tomorrow, you might get me again. It depends on if JTATM1 is able to step in and take care of the master plan. We'll see. If he cannot, tomorrow I'll be breaking down some of the top receivers and defensive players to pick up for your Sunday matchups. Going IDP tomorrow along with wide receivers. JTATM Money can't get in. That's what I'm going to do. But we have a sister of shows. We have four other shows here, guys. The Master Plan, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday mornings. Then, on Monday, we got Sylvia Crawley with Time Out. Time Out is a different type of show. It's different from our sports shows. Even though sports is the premise, it's basically taking a time out where you have to step back, reflect, rethink, and come up with a new plan of action to attack whatever problem it is that you're going through. Sylvia has people on the line a lot of times discussing issues that go on in their everyday lives that affect them, their families, and in some ways, the listener can relate because it's happening to you. She has special guests, friends of hers from the WNBA college, like Marion Jones and all these other folks that have come on the show. She's getting more toward the fans, though, the listeners, getting more of the listeners involved and talking about items that each one of us normally deal with day to day. That's Time Out with Sylvia Crawley, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Mondays. Then on Thursdays, you got the second show that had it all, which is FSP Cruise Show. Jeff Black and Jerry, Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. They are there doing what they do because they do it for you, breaking down the NFL matchup of the day, going over the sports news of the day, as well as discussing matters that are important to the fantasy enthusiasts. Boxing is one of the biggest things that happens on that show, too. So you got to get into that. You got to, especially if you're a boxing fan. But these guys are ready and able to do everything to inform you and entertain you. All it is just tuning in. FSP Cruise Show every Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just before the NFL Thursday night game. Then on Fridays, you've got Mac Williams and Jerry Taylor with No Chaser. Trust me when I say that No Chaser is a controversial show. It is. Mac thinks way differently than any of us, but that's okay because it's a free world. You're entitled to do so. If you want to go politically to one side and be totally against what the rest of us think, that's fine. We need balance. Yeah, everybody needs balance. Maybe it'll open up somebody's eyes, and maybe they'll say, well, you know what, you're right, man. But No Chaser is a no-holds-barred conversation about the way of the world politically. Occasionally, Mac will talk about sports and bring on a guest or a book author or something like that, but mainly It's he and Jerry, the old-timer versus the young gun, discussing politics and things that affect the world. Those guys are on it. They're on it. Anyway, that's 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Fridays right here on Fantasy Sports and Politics Network. Find us at blogtalkradio.com/BICHBK. Again, that's blogtalkradio.com/ICHBK. You gotta love us. Then on Saturdays, right back here with me, Mr. FSP, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, discussing the things that matter the most. What is that? Fantasy, sports, and politics. Got to throw it in there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I got to get ready to get out of here. I just want to thank you guys for tuning in to us. Check us out on spotonradio.webs.com for any information that we have. You listen to the shows. They stream 24/7, 365, all of our latest programming. That's, again, spotonradio.webs.com. And you can hear this program along with others, or you can come back here and listen to the archives. Either way, you'll get the information, motivation, and variety that we provide. We enjoy you. We thank you. And always want to keep you here. Why? Because you're like family. In a week or two, like I said, we're going to announce our sponsor. Get ready for it. Get ready. If you want to be a sponsor, go to spotonradio.com or fantasysportsandpolitics.webs.com and jump on. Shoot us an email. Let us know your intention. We got plenty of plans for you. Phone lines, shows, network, you name it. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I got to get out of here. So, we'll see you next week. Hasta mañana. I'm out of here.
Fantasy, sports, and politics.
Get ready to rumble!
You want to talk smack? You in the right place. So take a step back before I get all up in your face. I know you got your little views, you know I got mine. But there's like 50 other dudes holding on the phone line. Your voice will be heard, sir.
Next caller, please.
And if I don't concur, we can agree to disagree.
We're talking fantasy.